So, team one, that's Lee and Owen, are going to take on team two, Jason and Megan. So each team gets three questions, and if it's a draw, we have a tie break for you. So team one, this is Lee and Owen. Your first question, true or false? So just tell me true or false, and you can confer, of course. Pirates wore eye patches so they can see in the dark. Is that science fact or science fiction?
I'm going to go false. How about you, Owen?
I think the eye patch was so that when they came out of the bottom deck, they could adjust their eyes to the light easier. I'm trying to think.
So you're going to say true?
I'm going to say true.
Oh, I got to go. They're ballast in the rocks.
So. Absolutely right. It sounds like a joke, but it's widely claimed they wore eye patches because they were covering over missing eyes. But actually, they did this so they could see when they went below decks because they would still have one eye adjusted. Right, over to Megan and Jason. True or false, the ancient Greeks would get drunk after making an important decision. They'd know whether it was sound if they still felt the same way when they were drunk. Is that science fact or science fiction? What do you two think?
I kind of want that to be true.
Yeah, I know the Greeks liked drink.
What, today or historically?
Well, they have tons of stuff dealing with wine. Wine strainers, wine drinking cups, drunken wine drinking scenes.
So much is written about the importance of wine and the philosophy behind wine. And so
what
true?
Do you think?
I'm going to say true. Yeah, we're going to go with true.
I liked your logic, but it was actually the ancient Persians. Bit subtle this. They were from 550 to 330 before Common Era. According to the ancient Greek historian Herodotus, the ancient Persians had a ritual of intoxication. They believed that you could only tell the truth when you were drunk, so they'd drink a lot of wine after deciding on something, and if their minds still felt the decision was right when they were drunk, they considered it the right decision. I think you'd have to be drunk to come up with a rule like that, wouldn't you? Right, on to round two. So it's Lee and Owen in the lead at the moment. Round two. Which is bigger? We want the larger of the two in this round, okay? Which is larger, the number of taste buds on a human tongue or the number of stone blocks that were used to build the giant pyramid? What do you think?
Oh, taste buds.
I would go with taste buds.
We're gonna go with taste buds just because, I mean, they're not that big a pyramid. And there's a void in them.
So you're going true or false?
We're going.
Larger number is the taste buds. Actually, it's not true. The pyramid wins. Did you know that, Megan?
Did you count the void? The new void they found.
The pyramid wins. We estimate more than 2 million stones were used to build the Great Pyramid. The number of that number is at least 100 times larger than the 10,000 or so taste buds on a human tongue. So not that many taste buds. So. Currently still in the lead, you two, but let's see, the other pair might equalise now. Question four, Jason and Megan. What's larger, the distance from the surface of the Earth to the centre of the Earth, or the distance from the surface of the Earth to where the International Space Station is orbiting?
That's going to be distance from surface to centre.
Yeah.
So greater distance would be the surface to the centre.
Do you know how far it is?
Isn't the diameter 5... I'll get this wrong. 5,000 plus kilometers, I believe, is a diameter, isn't it?
Not surprisingly, Owen has his hand up. What is the
Can I get a bonus point for suggesting 6,371 kilometers?
It's about that's right.
Come on. Plus or minus. It's actually greater at the equator than the to the
north. Yeah, it's about 6,000 kilometres from the planet's surface, although there is a bulge around the equator, making it slightly larger, between the surface of the Earth and the core or centre of the Earth. But it is only about 400 kilometres to where the International Space Station is orbiting. One all so far. So here we go, on to the final round. Lee and Owen, what came first, Coca-Cola or Tyrannosaurus Rex? What do you think?
Well, they're going to refer to the name there, I presume. And so we've got Coca-Cola in late 19th century, right? Early 20th, 30th. And Tyrannosaurus Rex is going to be later than that, I guess, on naming. What's your thoughts, Owen?
I mean, it has to be a trick question, presumably.
Coca-Cola. So. Wait, no, we're not allowed to think like that. I'd go with Coca-Cola earlier.
You're going Coca-Cola, okay. You get a bing bong for that. The company was founded in 1892. The Tyrannosaurus Rex was given its name by Henry Fairfield Osborne, who's president of the American Museum of Natural History, in 1905. So Coca-Cola has it. Right, so that's two to Lee and Owen. Megan and Jason currently on one. Let's see if you're going for a tiebreaker. What came first, the discovery of the hole in the ozone layer or the first space shuttle launch?
I was going to say space shuttle, yeah.
Go with shuttle.
Yeah, you're competitive. I can feel the competition oozing out of Megan. That's right. Columbia blasted off for the first time in April 1981. The ozone hole was discovered. Does anyone know what year the ozone hole was discovered? It was actually 1984 by scientists at the British Antarctic Survey, Brian Gardner and his colleagues. That was in Cambridge. And they made that. They didn't make the discovery in Cambridge. Obviously, they went to Antarctica to make the discovery. But they were working here when they made that discovery. It led to the Montreal Protocol in 1986, the banning of chlorofluorocarbons in fridges and aerosols and things. And the ozone hole, which is currently Australia-sized, has stopped expanding. So we think that actually that was one of the most important interventions on environmental grounds we've yet made. Right, so that means we have a tiebreak situation. So here we go with our tiebreaker. Whoever gets the closest answer to this one will win. Final question. When did the last woolly mammoths walk on Earth? Answer to the closest that I've got written down here. What do you all think?
About 18,000.
Is that what... I'm going to say something very different than that.
Okay, you guys ready?
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's start. We'll go give Lee the chance first. What do you reckon?
I'll say about 3,500 years to 4,000 recent ones found in
3,500 years ago or BC.
Oh, BC.
Okay, you're going to 3,500 BC. Okay, and let's go to the other team. Let's go to Megan and Jason. What do you think?
I thought it was about 4,000.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
So we have effectively the same answer.
Yeah. Okay, actually, the answer is you're probably quite surprised. 1650 BC is the current evidence. Although most of the woolly mammoth population died out by 10,000 years ago, there was a small population of up to 1,000 woolly mammoths that were living on until 1650 BC. And to put it in context, as you will well know, Megan, the Egyptian pharaohs were midway through their empire, and it was about 1,000 years after the pyramids at Giza were built while there were still woolly mammoths trotting around on Earth. So I think everyone gets a point. So we have actually a perfect solution that no one goes home any the wiser or any much a winner. So very well done to everyone there.
Everyone pretty much wants to be breeding tigers, and we do have to limit the number of recommendations we can give because there simply isn't the space to house all the potential tiger cubs there could be.
In this month's Naked Genetics, we take a trip to the zoo to find out how conservationists are preserving the genetic diversity of some of the world's most endangered species, from terrific tigers to tiny snails. Plus, our gene of the month is down the pub already. Listen and download now at nakedscientist.com/genetics.